And it's about time for true crime.
Hey.
Hi, how are you?
Just swell. How are you?
Ooh, I'm just peachy.
Just peachy. I like it.
Although I will say, it's been a hell of a Tuesday. It's so drizzly. It's so, honestly, it's kind of nice that it's a little chilly, but it's a little chilly. It's a little gray. And I just want to listen to true crime in comfies. So at least we're doing that tonight.
We've had this heat wave here in New England that has lasted pretty much the whole summer, it feels like, but probably a solid like 3 or 4 weeks of just like upper 90 degrees, solid humidity. Like as a curly haired girly, it has been up in a bun with a headband. Like, don't look at me. We're not talking about it. We're ignoring it. Eyes down here.
Like, thank you very much.
And today we got some good rain and it's cooled off. Oh. I've got the windows open right now. I'm in a sweatshirt. I'm comfy, cozy, ready to record. This is a good day.
Which quite literally we haven't, at least at my house, we haven't been able to open the windows at all because it's been so hot that doing that is like assured melting.
Yeah, no, not good. Just not good.
No. Speaking of though, getting all comfy, cozy with true crime stuff. Are there some updates on Karen Reed? I think...
Yes, there are some updates. So I've been following it a little bit more than Abby, which I'll be honest is not saying much because Abby hasn't followed it at all.
And
it's followed it like a smidge because I've waited for all of it to come out. It was just hilarious because we live right here and it's been going on.
Yes.
Right next to us. And we've not really, we've tried to, I don't know. I've just not gotten into it. I've fought myself. Because mm-hmm. I've wanted to, but I know that all the information isn't out yet, and I'm going to drive myself crazy because I'm not going to get it.
Right.
So, if you don't know, Karen Reed was accused of murder, accused of murdering her police officer boyfriend in the winter months. He was found in, like, a snowbank, basically, under some snow, and I think she was accused of, like, hitting him with her car, and she just did trial where there was a mistrial. There was a hung jury. And mm-hmm. so, obviously, that's where that ended. So then they filed another motion to try her again.
Okay.
So then I think they were supposed to do that in, like, January. But, like, that's always tentative. It's probably going to get kicked out. I think her defense counsel team is trying to push to have all of it dismissed.
Yeah.
Entirely. So I think there's a lot of moving parts here. I just think so much of it hasn't been released yet, and I think that that's definitely a case that I want to cover, but I'm not gonna get lost in like some of the drama blogs because I think a lot of people want to publicize and benefit from that piece of it, and I'm like, I want the facts. There's a dead man here.
Well, and truly, like, what a terrible time for everyone involved. Like, his family's mourning, she's mourning, regardless of whether they find her at guilt or not. Like, that's still a loss. And if she didn't do it, how terrible. Well, if she did, exactly. How terrible.
Like, absolutely.
It's all bad.
And the biggest thing, too, is so the O'Keefe family, which is John, so he's the victim in this case. I feel like John has been sort of overlooked in this whole thing because it's about Karen and it's about the other police officers in the investigation and issues with them and all this stuff. And at the end of the day, like, if I remember correctly, I believe John's sister had passed away of either a tumor or cancer or something. Oh. And she had young children at the time. And he stepped in and took guardianship over them and was raising those kids as his own.
There's so many moving parts here. That's so sad.
And so now that he's gone, it's like they've lost their parents again.
Ugh.
And so in the heart of all of this, where Karen Reed, did she, didn't she, I think... it hasn't all been brought out yet.
Right.
I don't know if they tried her prematurely. I don't know if they put the wrong people on the stand.
But something. I don't know. Yeah.
Something happened. I don't know if she's guilty. And I think that people who are passionate are really passionate one way or the other. But it's like one of the few cases where I think people are very polarized. And especially in New England, it's like if you talk to people in Massachusetts, especially like, you know, somebody connected, it's like, it's something that people
will tell you.
It's like politics. It's like people won't bring it up because it's almost like a political thing. It's like, don't talk about it.
Yep.
Because I don't want to know what side you're on, kind of thing.
Polarizing.
Like it kind of, it has that sort of effect on the smaller communities around here. And so I do want to give it some time for some of the dust to settle, because I don't want to prematurely
and with go court into it. Proceedings still going on, like, I know Allie and I are big fans of waiting until there's a result before we share things, and not because
the facts. We need the facts. I'm not going off of Joe Schmo's like, oh well, I heard from a friend that this happened. Oh really? Right, like, well, we're not printing that. So
we need credible sources. We need credible information. So we just sort of wait and we hang until the writing on the wall has become clearer and has significant backing.
Yeah. So anyway, but I'm not sure. That's good updates. I'm not sure if they're going to go through with it or not. But it's still, I mean, I'm not sure because nobody's sure yet. I think that remains to be seen. But it's something that I'm following where it ends up. Mm-hmm. But I'm not diving into all of the nitty gritty because, again, I just don't think it's all out there yet. But that's a little true crime news, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, yeah.
What's been going on with you?
Oh, nothing new. Well, kind of some stuff that's new. It's mostly the yearly things. You know, all the appointments. Last week, I was an idiot. I don't know why I did this. I scheduled 4 different appointments for the same week.
Ma'am.
Because apparently I hate myself. One of those was my cat's vet visit.
Oh, no.
Which, ironically enough, was last week. On Tuesday, like on recording day, I had to leave work, go home, take my cat to the vet, go home, come back, record. It was a whole thing.
I don't know if you guys have been listening or if this is your first episode, but if it is, first of all, rate, review, follow, subscribe to. I mean, don't rate it yet. You just listened. Come on, that's irresponsible. But
if you wanted
definitely
to
follow, well, only if it's 5 stars. Come on.
Yeah.
But Abby's cat is an asshole. I love him dearly. My nephew is. He loves me.
He's a lovable terror. But he's a terror.
Hates most people, but curled up like a little snug as a bug in a rug on my lap.
Yes. Newton has a rich lore, a very rich lore that I won't get all of into now, but I did adopt him as a kitten, even though they told me that he was 2 years old. He definitely was not.
Tripled in size and he's still small.
Yes. And he like his face changed, his coat changed. Like he grew. He was a kitten.
He was a baby.
But he is now at literally triple the size, 8 pounds. Yeah. So he's a wee babe and he's super fluffy. So he looks a lot bigger.
But the problem is 8 pounds, this thing fucking attacks.
He has a Napoleon complex like none other. And he was definitely like on the street when they found him. So he's feral. Like he's a full feral boy.
The Secret Service should have hired Newton.
He would have done a great job.
He would have done a better job.
The thing about him is that he's clearly not happy. He's like very angry and very aggressive. And I've tried everything. I've tried food. I've tried the place. I've tried like his litter box location. I am so intimately connected to Jackson Galaxy's YouTube. It's not even funny. And people keep saying they're going to recommend him. And I'm like, with all due respect, I think he might break Jackson Galaxy. Like, he's a confusing cat. But he did go to the vet, which for his 8 pounds does take 900 milligrams of gabapentin.
I remember you calling me once in tears being like, I feel so bad.
I do. I have like an existential crisis every time I have to.
I'm like, this is what he needs. He will feel better.
Yes. And it's the only way I can get through it is knowing like he needs to go to the vet. They need to check him out. And the only way for him to do that is to be drugged out of his mind. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like a evil, vile person who's like drugging a being without their consent, and not in like, he's not like smoking a little catnip. Like, he's drugged.
Yeah, he walks sideways.
Yes. So I was happy when that was over. But in Newton news, in the pod pet news, he did, just like Mummy, get prescribed Prozac. So we love that.
Like mother, like son.
He's a Prozac cat.
I love that. If you want to see Newton, you can scroll pretty fucking far back on our Instagram page. Yes. And you can see some Newton pics.
And if you wanted to send us your pod pets on Instagram, you could, and maybe we'll make another one and I'll send you an updated photo of Newton to put in there.
Yeah, let us know. Do you guys want some updated pictures of Newton? Do you want some Mia and Oliver pictures?
Oh my gosh, I need Mia and Oliver pictures.
I don't think I've posted them. I think I've shared them on stories, but I don't think I've posted them. I should post some Mia and Oliver.
You should. The pod pets. The pod pets of the pod.
The pod pets of the pod.
But
speaking of the pod.
Speaking of the pod.
Should we get into the pod?
I really kind of think we should.
Okay. Well, Skipper stops skipping.
Yoo-hoo. Pod's on.
Jinx.
You want me to
coke? Jinx. Well, hi, hello, and welcome back to About Time for True Crime, your favorite true crime podcast.
Aw, you guys.
You guys are so sweet to us. I want to jump into our case today. We are going to be talking about Daniel Wozniak. Bad actor, worst person.
Oh my.
Yes.
Daniel.
Real quick before we get started, just to kind of jump into the sources before I forget. And I notice I've forgotten in the past couple I've done, but know that we always have all of our sources linked so you can always look through them.
Every time.
We normally end up having to have them linked in a separate document because what? We have a character limit.
Yep.
And that it just be like that. So know that you can always have them, but I did use a lot of LA Times, Oxygen, Cinemaholic, ABC News. I watched a Bailey Sarian video on it.
Love her.
I just love her. I used Business Wire. I used ABC News, and I used a blog that we're going to talk about later, but I'm not going to say the name because it's going to give some stuff away.
Ooh.
Okay.
Okay.
So we're going to start our case.
All right.
And we're going to begin our case today with Juri Kabushi.
Okay.
Now, she went by Julie, and in almost every source I saw referred to her as Julie. Even her family referred to her as this. So I'm going to call her that because it seemed that that was the preferred name.
Okay.
Julie was born February 14th, 1987.
Oh, V-Day baby.
She was a Valentine's Day baby. Julie had two brothers, but she was the only daughter, which meant that she held a very dear spot in her parents' heart.
Of course.
Her parents, June and Masa, adored Julie ever so much. She was a dancer. She did tap, jazz, ballet, you name it. She did it. And yes, she was also into other arts. And she actually wanted to do that with her career. She wanted to turn that into a career. She wanted to do like fashion design. Some sources said interior design, but most said fashion. And I do think that it was fashion design, though.
Well, and that makes sense, too, if she was dancing. Like, a lot of dancers really like picking out their own costumes and, like, making some of them for recitals. That'd be cute.
Exactly.
I like that. Artsy queen.
In the time that we're talking about, Julie was 23.
Okay.
She lived in Southern California, and she was attending Orange Coast College in Costa Mesa.
Okay.
Which is a school in California, and she was earning a degree in art design.
Love that.
And we're talking about the time frame now is May 2010.
Okay. All right.
On May 21st, Julie left her home where she lived with her parents, and she was heading to her brother's house. Her brother's name is Taka.
Okay.
She told her mom that she was leaving. She told her that she was going there. She said she was going to go have dinner with him and his fiance.
Aw.
She said, "Don't wait up. I don't know how late I'm going to be."
Yeah.
She said that she told her mom she loved her and she left. Her brother was actually getting married, and when Julie went to his house for dinner, him and his fiance asked her to be in their wedding.
Aww,
as a bridesmaid.
Cute.
Which was very sweet, and they gave her a tiara and she put it on right away.
I love that.
So it was a very wholesome night. I don't know that Julie knew that she was being asked. I think it was kind of a surprise.
That's so cute.
So it was a very nice night. Julie was very family oriented and loved her family. I think she really loved her soon to be sister-in-law too, and
yeah,
was really excited to be part of their special day.
Well, and as someone who was very recently in that exact situation, it's so fun. Like, it's such a joyous and celebratory time.
Exactly. And I think their wedding was like the following year, maybe, or mm-hmm, later that year. So it was just like she wanted to get together and just talk about their wedding and talk, yes, about the planning anyway. And, you know, she's in fashion design and she wants to talk about all the colors and all of the design elements of the wedding. And then they're like, "Well, we actually have something to ask you.
Yeah.
Will you be in our wedding?
Will you be part of that design?"
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, cute, was just very, very sweet.
Love that.
While they were having dinner, though, Julie started getting some strange texts from a good friend.
Okay.
His name was Sam Herr. H-E-R-R, in case okay. you are like me and need the visual. Sam was a guy that she'd met at school, and they'd become very fast friends. From what I can tell, it was never romantic between them. They just were truly very good friends. She thought of him like a brother and actually wanted her brother to meet him.
Oh, okay.
Sam was an army veteran who had served in Afghanistan. Wow. He was very close with his parents, Steve and Raquel. And though he didn't have siblings, he did keep very close friends. Sam was successful in the army and he wanted to enlist again, but he was taking some time off of that. He was taking classes at school, and this was the same school as Julie, so this is how they met. Perfect. And again, they became friends very quickly. And they actually met because Julie offered to tutor him in one of their classes. I think it might have been anthropology. And he ended up getting like an A in the class afterwards. And so from there, they just kind of became friends and they just stuck together.
I love that.
Sam lived in Costa Mesa in his own apartment, so he didn't have any roommates. And he was doing very well for himself.
Mm-hmm.
He was a college student, so, you know, financially, that's not always the most glamorous, but he'd had maybe like 60 grand in the bank from his time in the military.
Dang. Good for him.
And he had been saving it. Right. So he was able to support himself and live off of that. For a 26-year-old, Sam was doing pretty well.
Damn, yeah. Seriously.
So when Julie got these texts from Sam, she mentioned them to her brother because she just thought they were strange.
Okay.
And she kind of got concerned. And so I think she was sort of like, I'm sorry to cut this early. I was planning on staying, but I think I need to go check on him.
Yeah.
So she told her brother that that's where she was going. She was going to go to Sam's place to make sure that he was okay, that he needed her. And, you know, these texts were so out of character for him that she was kind of getting worried about him.
Okay. Like maybe some mental health concerns?
Yeah. Like,
okay.
It was just strange. And he was saying that he needed her. And
oh, cryptic and vague, too.
Yeah. Like, yeah. He had a lot going on. He had some family stuff going on, is kind of like what he was alluding to.
Okay.
But not providing any detail. And he's just like, I really need you to come here. Could you come by tonight? Could you do that? And she's like, yeah, of course, anything you need. But she's thinking, like, wow, that's so strange. He's never.
Yeah.
He doesn't behave like that. So something must really be wrong. He really must need me.
Yeah.
So she kind of let her brother know that, but she left. And that was the last time her brother saw her.
Oh.
So fast forward to the next morning, June, Julie's mom, woke up, and when she went to check on Julie, realized that Julie wasn't there. And that was concerning because even though Julie said, don't wait up, she didn't say, I wouldn't be home.
Right. And also as a grown woman with a brother, like, it's fun to go hang out, but we're not necessarily doing sleepovers for shits and gigs.
Well, and especially, I mean, if your parents were expecting you home, yes, she's a 23-year-old woman, but I also think it's common courtesy, even in a roommate situation, especially when I had roommates, like, if I'm sleeping out, I'll let you know.
Right.
Do I owe you an explanation of everywhere I'm going and why? No, but I think it's a common courtesy. If I'm coming home late and you're going to be sleeping and you're going to come home to hearing, you're going to wake up to hearing me come home.
Yeah.
That might freak you out. You should know that. Or
safety wise.
Or wake up concerned because I'm not there. I don't want you to worry. There doesn't need to be needless any of that.
Exactly.
To me, that's just how I operate. Some people are different. But I think that it was a common courtesy thing. And I think in their house, especially with a parent-child dynamic, it was, tell me where you are.
Right.
You're a student. You live under my roof. You play by my rules.
Right.
And if you're going to be out, let me know.
Yeah.
So when June got up and Julie's not there, she's like, that's very strange. She checks her phone. No text from her.
Okay.
Also strange.
Even weirder.
Because if she's not going to be there and say she stayed over at her brother's house.
Right.
Well, why aren't there any texts from either of them saying,
I'm staying over.
Oh, she stayed over.
Yeah.
So then she tries to call her, but Julie didn't answer, which wasn't like her.
Okay.
And at first she was kind of thinking, okay, well, Julie's 23. She's of legal age to drink. And you know, everyone waits till they're 21 to drink.
Yes, they do. Every single person.
So she has waited, you know, she's had 2 years
right.
to do this. If she drank, maybe she was responsible.
Right.
And she stayed over, did whatever. But then she called her son and she's like, hey, so is Julie there? And Taco was like, No. Actually, Julie left kind of early because she got a text from a friend telling her that he needed her. And I haven't heard from her since.
Okay.
So now they're both like, well, when was the last time you heard from her?
Right.
So it's getting kind of odd. And June just had this feeling, something that I can only liken to mother's intuition, where she just knew something was wrong.
Right.
And she just knew in her heart and her stomach and like her bones that something was wrong. Something was really, really wrong.
Yeah.
And she just called and called, but Julie didn't answer her phone and just made her panic even more. So the next call that June made was to the Irvine Police Department to file a missing person report.
I mean, what a terrible place to be in, but what a good thing to hear of such a quick response.
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
But June wasn't the only parent whose Saturday morning began with a very strange feeling.
Oh.
Steve Herr, Sam's dad, had also grown worried when he hadn't heard from his son.
Oh, no.
Sam had plans to spend the day with his parents, and they hadn't heard from him yet, which was not typical of him. And when they tried to call him, his phone was off. It went straight to voicemail, which also was definitely not like him.
Right.
And it kind of set alarm bells off in their minds because he definitely wouldn't have blown off plans with them. He was very family oriented and
right.
He wouldn't have turned off his phone or let it die. It just, that really wasn't like him. So they're kind of growing concerned at this point too.
Right. And it doesn't sound like he, like as someone who values his family time, also isn't someone who would just like, you know, quote unquote, no call, no show.
His yeah, own plans. And he's just a regimented person and he's got his routines and he's got what he does. And
right.
This really didn't fit that. And so Steve, the dad, is kind of like also kind of had that feeling where he's like, this just doesn't feel right. Yeah. It's just weird. Oh. And what's different in this situation is that because Sam lived alone, it wasn't like he could just go check his bedroom and see what was going on.
Right.
But what Steve did have was a key.
Okay.
Steve let himself into Sam's apartment with his key after knocking and nobody came to the door.
Mm-hmm.
And he just wanted to make sure that his son was okay. He wasn't trying to like ruffle any feathers or like if he happened to be there like with a lady friend or,
right,
you know, drunk or hungover or anything. Like he would have let him have his day. He just wanted to make sure he was okay.
Right, which I understand.
But when Steve got there, he let himself inside and at first everything seemed normal. But he didn't see Sam.
Okay.
But when he got to Sam's bedroom, he found something horrible.
Oh no.
He found a young woman, definitely dead, with a gunshot wound to her head.
Her oh my gosh.
Her clothes had been ripped off, and on her sweatshirt, "All yours, fuck you," had been written.
Oh gosh.
The young woman was 23-year-old Julie Kabushi.
Ugh.
She was still wearing the tiara she was given the night before at her brother's house.
Oh.
Steve immediately called for help. He was obviously distraught, and he had just found this horrible scene inside right. his son's apartment, and his son was nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
So he goes in looking for his son, and instead he finds a dead young girl.
And no son.
No son.
Which makes your mind go a billion places.
Of course. So you're like, did my son do this? Did somebody else? First of all, where's my kid? And who is she?
Yep.
So police got there right away. Can you imagine the phone call they got?
So, hey.
Yeah. Saturday morning. Hey, how's it going? So, found a dead body on my son's bed.
Don't know where he is. Don't know who this is.
Correct.
Goodness. Oh my gosh. Okay.
They identified Julie pretty much immediately and sent for her family to be notified, which is a part of the law enforcement job, I imagine, to be extremely difficult and solemn. You're delivering the worst possible news any loved one can hear.
Ugh, yeah.
They took a look at Julie's cell phone and they saw those strange texts from Sam.
Mm-hmm.
And according to Oxygen, Sam texted Julie, "Can you come over tonight at midnight alone? Going out for a bit. Very upset. Need to talk. Please, no sex. I need to talk to someone."
What?
And Julie said, LOL, ew, Sam, we're like bro and sis, no sex.
Okay.
And Sam just reiterated that he needed someone to talk to and needed her there. And Julie responded, yeah, that's fine. Sam, I'm here for you, like family.
Oh.
They confirmed with Julie's brother that she was at his place when she started to get those texts and likely when she was responding to him, that right. She was still at his house. And that when she left there, she went to Sam's. And that even she said out loud, she shared with him and his fiance that my friend's texting me, but it sounds really weird.
Right.
He's never acted like this before.
So out of character already.
And that's why she wanted to check on him.
Yeah.
But then no one heard from her after that. So investigators rightfully start looking into Sam because where the hell is he?
Right.
And it looks like he just lured Julie to his apartment, sexually assaulted her, and took off.
Yeah.
Because he's not there, his car is not there, and he is not answering his phone.
But she is there.
And she's there. The texts he sent her were strange, and now he's MIA. And then they research a little bit into Sam's past, and... You know, on the investigators' part, they're not wrong for this, but this made them suspicious because they revealed that in his later teen years, Sam was in with a very rough crowd. And though I don't think he was in the gang, some of the people he ran with were in a gang.
Okay.
And when he was 18, someone was killed in connection with the people that he ran with. And initially, Sam was one of many that was arrested.
Okay.
He was eventually acquitted. And the real offenders were caught and, you know, justice was served and all of that. But Sam's life was very close to going down an entirely different path.
Right.
But this was a really pivotal point in Sam's life because I think it was the first time where he realized that the people around him were really capable of a lot of shit.
Yeah.
And that they were willing to do a lot of shit. And even if it weren't people that were close to him, it might have been like a friend of a friend of a friend. But because they all ran in the same group and, you know, all their names were kind of, there could be a dotted line between them. You know, it was pretty mm-hmm. easy for him to get swept up in it. And I think that was a light bulb moment for him where he said, yeah. Okay, my life can go down this way or it can change. And that's when he decided to change.
Love that for him.
But what this showed investigators was... He was capable of making poor choices.
Right.
As we all are. But remember, he's 26. This isn't that long ago.
Right.
As much as we'd love to say that we are so different in our mid-20s as we were when we were teens. And we should be. Let's be real.
Yeah.
But we're not acting like this was 20 years ago. This is a decade ago. Max. Or less.
Yeah.
So there's that. But they're like, okay, well, he was already arrested in connection to a murder not even 10 years ago.
Right.
And now there is a dead woman in his bedroom.
Right.
That's of concern.
It is.
So they think they've got their guy. Right. And there was somewhat of a checkered past running with violent offenders. This was a violent crime that took place in his home, and he had very clearly invited her there.
Yep.
So it kind of seems like it all connects. So there was a manhunt on for Sam and they believed him to be dangerous. But Steve, his dad, knew in his heart that Sam didn't do this, that he couldn't have done this. And all that truly knew Sam knew it too, especially his friends.
Right.
They just wanted to help in any way that they could to, I don't know, assist in the... search for Sam, but also say, hey, listen, I know my friend and I know that he wouldn't have done this.
Right.
But the issue was is that they were looking for Sam, any information that they could get on Sam on Friday.
Right.
Because, you know, the body was found Saturday morning. So they're like, okay, what was Sam doing Friday?
Right.
And unfortunately, almost all of his friends hadn't seen him Friday. So as helpful as they were for, like, you know, the last few weeks and months of things.
Yeah.
They weren't exactly... useful, not their fault, but in painting the picture of the last 24 to 48 hours.
Right. They're a character witness, not an alibi. And at this point in time, we don't need a character witness.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, again, because so many of them hadn't seen him since he was reported missing, the only way that they were able to contribute was to be able to give names of others who might have seen him. So they're like, mm-hmm. well, I didn't, but maybe he has. Or I didn't, but maybe this one has.
Right.
So in a way, it was very helpful.
Right. Because build the network.
Because it did give a lot of information. And really, it was Steve, Sam's dad, that was taking initiative to do all of this stuff.
Wow. Okay, good for him.
Mostly because the investigators were more so just trying to look for Sam.
Yes.
Less about what happened on Friday, more of where Sam is right now on Saturday.
Yes.
So Steve's kind of working backwards. The investigators are like, we believe that there's a dangerous person out there who has already killed one person. Right. And we don't know who else is at risk now.
Got it.
So the focus is, and I think rightfully, on, okay.
Let's find Sam.
Let's find Sam, because who else could get hurt?
Right.
So Steve is kind of the one interacting with the friends, and because him and his son were very close, he knew a lot of the names of a lot of the friends, and right. so he could reach out to them and say, listen, I've got no idea where my son is, what's going on?
Right.
Do you know anything about Friday? And they're like, well, shit, no, but this one might. Well, this one might. Well, this one might.
Got it.
So this led Steve to the only person who said that he did see Sam on Friday.
Okay.
And that was Daniel Wozniak.
Okay.
Sound familiar, maybe?
Yes.
Maybe not? Okay. You should know, you guys, because you clicked it, but...
I have a feeling he's got some woes.
Dad joke, really?
Sorry.
It's only, what are we, like...
Half hour. I waited.
Half hour into? Thank All you. Right. Well, Dan, I'm just going to call him Dan, Daniel, Danny boy.
Oh, Danny boy. Sorry.
Keep going. Another one? All right. Anyway. Dan also rented an apartment in the same complex. So okay. I guess it could make sense that he could see him, right? They're neighbors. Yeah. Dan told investigators that he saw Sam walking with a man who was wearing a black hat, but he didn't really notice anything else. Just saw him walking with this other dude.
Okay.
But then Steve logged into Sam's bank account records and saw that money was withdrawn from an ATM not far from where Sam lived in Long Beach, as well as a transaction from the pizzeria next to the ATM.
Okay.
Which was weird. So it was like grabbed pizza and made a
cash.
Yeah. Made a withdrawal or something. I don't know. Steve headed there to see if Sam would go back. Just thinking that, okay, maybe I'll run into my son. Maybe he's on the run.
He didn't
go very far, but maybe I can grab him.
Do we know how much money he pulled out? Was it like a large sum or was it like $40?
No, we don't know.
Okay.
Steve waited there for a little bit, but he didn't see anybody.
Right.
So he left. So he calls Dan back because, again, he's the last person that saw him. They're basically neighbors, so maybe he's seen him again. We don't know.
Right.
But this time, Dan said Sam told him he was having family problems.
Hmm.
And Steve and Sam were very, very close. Father and son and, you know, family.
Yeah.
So for there to be family problems seemed odd that he wouldn't know about them.
Yeah.
So not only did Dan's story change, because first it was, oh, I haven't seen him. I saw him with the guy in the black hat. Oh, now that you mention it, I did talk to him. He said he was having family problems.
Okay.
Now it's changed.
Right. And there's
and it's
more detail and detail that, I mean, no offense, but sounds sus.
And it's untrue.
Yeah.
So it's different and incorrect. Hmm.
The lie detector test determined that was a lie.
Meanwhile, investigators pull the camera footage from the ATM to see who made the withdrawal.
Okay.
Because somebody did.
Yeah,
from
that's
Sam's
fair.
Account. And to their surprise, it was not Sam.
Oh.
Wasn't him at all. In fact, it wasn't even Daniel.
Oh?
It was a teenager.
Huh?
By the name of Wesley Freilich.
Wes. That's fraud. Wes.
Wesley.
But he give it back.
Come on, man.
What the hell? What happened?
So they end up going to this kid's house, lights and sirens on.
Oh my goodness.
Thinking that Sam's in there, mind you. Like they think Sam put this kid up to
something,
pulling the money out of his account for him. So they pull up with like everything short of a helicopter, I think. Like it's like,
okay.
Like not just like a single cruiser. I mean like tons of them packed the street, like, come out with your hands up.
Yeah.
Megaphone. Like, SWAT. Yes. And Wesley comes out terrified. And they're like, listen, you were seen withdrawing money from an account belonging to a guy who is a murder suspect.
Yeah.
Why are you doing favors for him? How do you know him? What's the deal? And he's like, whoa, take it easy, man.
Oh, Wes.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay.
Wesley said that his former theater mentor, Dan Wozniak, had approached him and needed his help.
Sorry. Former theater mentor?
Correct.
Okay. See,
Dan must have been such a good actor because he actually told Wesley that he's no longer a community theater bro, as we're going to talk about soon, but he's actually working for a bail bonds agency and needed him to withdraw money for him because the card holder had breached bail and he himself couldn't do it. He just needed somebody else to do it.
And how old is Wes?
I think he's like 19.
Poor kid. Mm-hmm. Oh, dickhead.
Yeah.
Wow.
But this was a man that he had formerly looked up to.
Right.
And trusted.
A trusted adult.
And believed him. And I mean, Dan is like 26, 27. So it's not like he's like, you know, his dad's age. But he looked up to him in a way that was relatable. And he believed him. He presented him with paperwork that, I mean, frankly, I don't think Wesley would have known, even if it were written in crayon, if it were legit or not.
Right.
But he apparently was given paperwork that looked quite real.
Oh, so official.
Yes.
Okay.
So he's looking at this paperwork and Dan's saying, yeah, I do this for work now and I just need your help. Could you do me this solid? And he's like,
sure.
It's going to take me 5 minutes. Sure. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
And that was that.
Did he tell him he could get the pizza too? Or was that like,
for I funsies? Gotta believe that was for the pizza. It's gotta be.
Right?
It's gotta be.
Like, hey, kid, do this for me. Grab yourself a slice on the way home. Same card.
Right?
What the hell? Okay.
This was the investigator's link from Sam to Daniel, though.
Right.
Because they didn't have anything else. Sure, they lived in the same complex, but so did like 100 other people.
Yeah.
But they needed to find out how Dan wound up in possession of Sam's card information. Yeah. How did he have his debit card?
That's pretty fucking weird.
Dan Wozniak was 26 years old, and he lived, again, in that same complex with his fiance, Rachel Buffett.
Ooh.
The pair were actually due to marry in a few weeks, and they were both very active in their community theater scene.
Ooh.
Daniel was well-known, and I believe fairly talented, but he didn't have a full-time job, and if you can imagine, he wasn't raking in fat stacks with community theater. And soon he was very far behind on not only being able to pay for his wedding, but also just on rent.
Ugh.
Dan was arrested in connection to Julie's murder during his bachelor party. It was an impromptu bachelor party that his groomsmen put on for him on May 26th, 2 days before his wedding, May 28th.
Oh my God.
48 hours before this man's wedding. Yep. But just a couple days after Julie's body was found.
Right. Also, okay, to be fair, I was thinking how funny it would be to be like, ah, look, a traditional male bachelor party. They're strippers. It's a cop. Ha ha. Uh-oh. Like.
Right? But it's Danny DeVito.
Yeah, right.
From that Friends episode.
Oh my gosh, amazing.
Wait, you don't think I'm sexy? Yes, we do, Danny. Yes, we do. Damn it.
Ugh.
Love not him. Not this Danny.
No.
Not this one.
This is a Danny DeVito. No. You know?
Yep.
But, okay, so he's arrested at his bachelor party 48 hours before his wedding. If he deserves it, which it seems like he doesn't, hope he makes bail. But
can he afford it? He can't even afford his rent.
That's what I mean.
And this is just like, what, less than a week after Julie's body was found? So he's right. Like, hey, did you find my neighbor? What are you doing? Hey, ow, ow.
Owie. Yeah.
He's like, my arms don't bend like that. Ow.
Like, I'm not double jointed.
And I can make fun of him because I was a theater kid, but he is such a fucking annoying, just insufferable theater guy.
Hmm.
You know the type. Some of them are hilarious, cool, oh, yeah, awesome. He's just that whiny, like, meh.
He's the one where, like, the cast list got posted and he was like, but I wanted to be the lead.
But he got waiter number 4.
Yeah. And everything he says sounds like this because this is how you portray your feelings.
But when he whined, it's meh, meh, meh.
Yeah.
That's, anyway. Initially, Dan said that he didn't know shit about shit. I'm paraphrasing, of course, but I didn't know shit about shit. And then he said that he saw Sam walking with the guy with the black hat on. Mm-hmm. And then, shockingly, his fiance Rachel said that too.
Wow.
Because Rachel also saw a man with a black hat walking with Sam.
Wow.
Wow.
Also, I mean, they're theater kids. They're good at rehearsing their lines. So I'm not that shocked.
My thoughts exactly. But when they told Dan how they connected him to the transaction from the ATM and that, yes, we know you have his debit card, he went, ah, shit. So Dan changed his story. He said, okay, I'll tell you the truth. We had an insurance scheme that was about to take off.
Okay.
But before we could benefit from it, Sam went on a bender doing drugs, and when he was high, he killed a girl, and he needed to go on the run.
Huh?
Mm-hmm. This is Dan's story.
Daniel.
So then he said that he helped him, but only because he threatened him if he didn't. Dan told investigators that Sam said, "You rat me out, I'm gonna fucking kill you. And better yet, I'm gonna start with your wife." I think this theater guy spent too much time watching shitty gangster TV, but... anyway.
Oh, hey.
Oh.
What the hell? Okay.
Then Daniel made a comment about Julie's body. And he said, quote, "I saw the goddamn body. Is that what you want to hear? I was right over the body. I didn't touch her. I didn't do anything. I saw 2 gunshots in her head." But here's the thing. At first glance, Julie only appeared to have a single gunshot wound to the head.
Right.
And it was only actually during her autopsy that they could find that she had a second one.
Oh, okay.
And it's very graphic. It's because her brain matter was kind of covering everything. And so girl, you wouldn't have been able to see. So it was something that only somebody present when she was killed would know, that she was shot with 2 bullets, essentially. Right.
Or someone who was there saw it and for zero logical reason would then cover it up with her brain matter.
I mean, it was just the way that she was shot.
Well, yeah, and you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's the only other way that he would know that. And then with this story, that makes no sense.
No.
So
he's like, "What do you want me to say? I saw 2 shots in her head." But the cops are like, "We only thought there was one at first. We only just found out after the coroner took her and, you know, did the autopsy. We only just found out that there was 2. How did you know that there were 2?
Right.
That sounds like only something the killer would know.
I know how we know, but how did you know? Yeah. Yeah. Ugh.
Hands damn, on Daniel. The vehicle.
Ugh.
In a recorded call Daniel made from the jail to Rachel, his fiance, he talked about a backpack that he gave to his brother. He's such an idiot. He talked about a backpack that he gave to his brother, Tim. And he said that in that backpack were shell casings, Sam's wallet, Sam's ID, his checkbook, and his clothes that were covered in blood.
He said this on the line?
He said this on a recorded call. It literally says this call is being recorded. How? And then he went and said this.
I think to myself, where is the level of dumbfuckery? And then Lindsay Lohan echoes in my brain with, the limit does not exist.
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 Holy shit. Daniel. So what? So obviously he did something to Sam.
I don't know.
Because why would he have Sam's ID? Like, I get it. If you're on the run, you don't want to be seen taking shit out of an ATM, but like, you probably need that to buy a ticket or like rent a car.
Why would he have any of that? Why would he have said any of that? What? Just why? I have a lot of questions.
Daniel.
For our friend Daniel.
Okay.
So but keep going. His brother Tim was to hide it for him, or at least hold on to it. I don't really know what the plan was with the backpack, just that all of those things were in one place in that backpack and that the brother had it.
Hey, honey, could you and my brother aid and abet this crime? Thank you. Love you.
And Rachel was like, okay, well, these calls are what? Recorded. So I'm going to call the police.
She did?
Bye. Yeah, she did.
Good girl. Oh, my gosh. Love.
Wait.
Oh, no.
Dan was freaking out.
Okay.
But he knew it was over at this point.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of debate about Rachel and her role in this, because someone argued that because she knew the call was recorded, she acted surprised.
Okay.
When she was told this information about the backpack and all of that, and it was then and only then that she reported this to police.
Okay.
Because, I mean, what choice did she have? So, I guess it kind of depends how you look at that. Because the call was already recorded, the police were going to know about that anyway. So, her calling and reporting that
right
didn't necessarily lead them to anything. It may have brought them to it sooner, but you know damn well they were going to be listening to all of his calls.
Well, yeah.
So, was that self-serving to make herself look good? Some would argue. The other piece is that when she was told what he was accused of initially, she didn't act surprised, which, again, there's always an emphasis of how someone reacts to jarring news.
Right.
Whether it's the news of someone being killed or the news of your accusation, like you being accused of that.
Right.
Or somebody close to you being accused of that. And there's a million different ways that that can be interpreted and used against you or in your favor. And it just depends on the spin.
Right.
And it can really depend. But in this case, she had nearly no reaction.
Okay. And
the ironic part is that they're actors and that they did a really, really bad job acting. And yeah. In this case, she did a very poor job too.
Okay.
The other piece that was brought up here was that during her performance.
Sorry. Yes.
Well, we're going to get to it in a little bit, but basically, while all of this happened, they mm-hmm. did also have a performance of a play that they were both in, and she did kind of have a emotional time
okay.
in there. So we'll talk a little bit about it in a few minutes, but that's also pointed to. But the biggest thing that I think leads to it is that they both claimed to see the guy with the black baseball hat walking
right.
with Sam. And we know for a fact that didn't happen.
Got it.
So that, to me, take everything else aside, because those could be raw emotions that could have been genuine reactions, and people react different ways.
Right.
But that was a lie.
Well, and I think for me, to collaborate enough with someone to have a story that isn't true, there has to be some alarm or red flag as to why do we need this.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't know and I'm not a part of it, I'm saying, why are you telling me what I saw?
Mm-hmm.
And why does it matter that I repeat this? And then to follow that up with no reaction to the police is sus. Like, oh, yeah. Like, oh, I definitely saw this thing that you now know didn't happen. And you told me the reason why he was being charged. And I'm not really surprised. But now that I hear there might be evidence of this thing happening, I'm very concerned. It's just kind of back and forth.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Isn't it just kind of funky? I don't know. I guess you can look at it a number of different ways. And I won't tell everyone how to think of it. But I do just think it's worth noting. We're gonna talk about her a little bit more, but I just kind of want you to be thinking of that as we keep going too.
Right.
Regardless, because he's freaking out and he knows that it's over now, Dan just kind of like asks to speak with investigators. They didn't seek him out. He requested an interview, if you will.
Okay.
And so they granted it to him, and he agrees to finally tell the truth. So here's the truth as we know it, which is how Dan told it.
Okay.
Daniel and Rachel were engaged and living together, and though it appeared that the couple was on the same page, he had been keeping a secret. He was broke.
He was a big secret.
Broke. He was several months behind on their rent, and they were facing eviction.
Ugh.
And on top of that, they had a lavish wedding booked, as well as a very expensive vacation for their honeymoon booked, both of which they couldn't afford.
Oh.
And apparently, Rachel didn't know this. A little bit about weddings, and if you couldn't tell, there's a reason I chose this case. It's kind of speaking to me. Just with the cost of everything, I just thought it was funny. But according to Business Wire, the cost of a wedding in 2010 in the U.S., on average, was $26,000. And Forbes estimates the average cost today in 2024 to be $33,000.
I'm going to vomit.
Which is incredibly ridiculous and, yes, of course, expensive. And you might have even heard me commenting on just how much every single detail costs, and it seems that every vendor has a hidden fee and an inflated cost, but that's just, it is what it is right now. But I can clue you into a secret that nobody tells you.
Yeah.
You don't have to.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Well, of course you want the big fancy wedding, or maybe you don't. I mean, I didn't want the big fancy wedding, but I did want a wedding. There's a difference between needs and wants, and just because someone else has it doesn't mean you are owed that thing.
Right.
But if you work hard, you save up, and you make sacrifices, you too can have the money to spend on that one day if you want to.
Yeah.
And if you're lucky enough to have loved ones who are willing to help you out or are able to help you out in some ways, if not with money, maybe their time, then you are very blessed.
Right. Absolutely.
But these are wants. This is material. I'm getting married this September, and I'm over the moon excited, and I get to make a promise to my best friend before God and my friends and family who mean the most to me, and I get to spend the rest of my life with that man. However, I also know we would be just as married the next day if we went to town hall, filed the paperwork, and threw a party at our house a few weeks later.
Right, and the thing about a wedding is it's the party. The marriage is the lifelong thing. So, as exciting as it is to throw the party can be whatever the hell you want it to be, because your marriage is still going to be the same marriage in 10 years.
And I gripe in these things and I make jokes, but I made these decisions along the way. And if these were things that I couldn't do, we're not going to not eat for this.
Right.
You know what I mean? These are things that you save up for, you make sacrifices for. If this is what you want, trust me, there are certainly things that I could have chosen or demanded or whatever that would have made it 1,000 times more expensive.
Yeah.
But there are also things that aren't priorities to me. I want everyone to have a good time, and that is what it is. People have different, I don't know, standards or expectations or wants or needs or whatever, and that's fine. That's on you. If you're willing to fork up that money, because unfortunately it sounds cheesy or whatever, in bad taste to talk about money that much, but it is what it is. That yeah. is what you're talking about. That is the difference. And it is expensive. It is. People stupid can expensive. And will go into debt over that. Right. And if you're asking my opinion, it isn't worth it. So I'm going into all of these details because it's the root of our case today. Because,
oh my gosh, are you kidding?
Dan wanted the big wedding, and he wanted the honeymoon. He wanted the Hallmark photos and the attention. Remember, he's a performer and he wants that. He needs that. He and his wife-to-be needed to be the center of attention, the spotlight, the everything. And whether they had help from family, I don't know. That wasn't included in the research because there was more to talk about. But he was behind on their rent. Like they were facing eviction. So their big lavish wedding that was due in 48 hours, mind you, and their honeymoon after that, these were all things they could not afford.
Right.
And I don't know about you, but for most weddings, that money's due up front. So I don't really know, like, where, like, was this just to pay yourself back? Like, I don't really know, because that you already paid that.
Right.
Like, but anyway, I wanted to talk about all of this because this is where this comes from. because Dan wanted all of these things and he just wanted to take it. He didn't want to have to pay for it, and he had a friend in the neighborhood that he knew had money. Somewhere along the way, Sam must have mentioned to Dan maybe the money that he made in the army, or maybe just that he hadn't touched it, or maybe it came up of like, hey, what do they pay you when you're overseas? And, oh, well, you get this much a year, but I haven't touched mine.
Right.
You know, maybe it was something like that. I didn't get the sense that Sam was this boastful guy.
No.
But Sam mentioned the money that he had in his savings, and I think Dan saw red, or green, I guess. Dan saw Sam's savings account as the answer to his problems, and this 27-year-old, spoiled, rotten, entitled piece of shit felt owed what Sam had worked for. And that's a very nasty belief system to have, and I caution you against it.
Yeah, there are very few things that get me going, like entitlement.
Yes.
Hmm.
So, in Dan's words, he asked Sam for help moving some things in the attic of the local theater. I guess this was like the theater that Dan frequented. I guess this was the one that, like, the community theater.
Oh. Ooh, prestige.
I'm not shitting on people in theater. I'm just shitting on this guy.
Yeah.
Because he's just a scrote. But apparently his idea here was get Sam to go to this theater because Sam was always willing to help, and again, he was a good friend, so he said, I need help moving this thing, could you help me move this thing? And Sam said, yeah, I'll help you move the thing. Where's the thing? Let's go move the thing.
And like, of course, it's the nicest people, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, hey, you're my friend, yeah, I'll help. Of course. So
the theater that they were doing this at is ironically the same theater that Dan and Rachel performed at, like, very regularly, and the one that they actually had a performance at the very evening of the murders.
Oh.
Plural. When Sam got there, he had been brought up to the attic. I think he was turned away to grab whatever it was that Dan had lied about that needed to be moved, and he shot him in the head. After the first shot, I think Sam begged for help, like it had grazed him or hit him. He was in pain, but he was alert and panicked. And I don't think he thought that Dan did that to him. I think he thought they might have been in trouble.
Right, something happened.
But with the second shot, he was dead instantly.
Ugh.
Dan took Sam's wallet and keys. That evening, he and Rachel performed in the rendition of the play Nine, which is not one I'm familiar with. I don't know if you are. After giving what was recalled as an excellent performance, though it's said that Rachel broke down crying seemingly out of nowhere, either during the performance or just after. Okay. So I don't know if it, I would find it odd if it were during it. And right. They said it was so amazing, unless it was
part of a scene. Part or something.
Of it. Yeah, part of that. Either way. After the play wrapped, they did their bows, their claps, their blah, blah, blah. Dan used Sam's phone to text Julie those bizarre texts that we read earlier.
Okay.
To lure her to Sam's apartment. He got there about the same time that she did, and he used his acting talents to his advantage. He showed up and he said that he was getting some weird texts from Sam, and that Sam had said that there was some weird family stuff going on and that he was acting strangely. And Julie said, me too, I'm really worried about him. And Dan said, well, I have this spare key. He's not answering the door. Do you want to just make sure he's okay with me? So they go inside. Now, of course, he doesn't have a spare key. He took Sam's key because he killed Sam.
Right.
Once inside, he went into Sam's bedroom. Of course, Julie's walking throughout the rest of the apartment. She's not, like, standing at Dan's side. And he called for Julie to come see something. So Julie comes into the room because he's like, oh, Julie, come see this. She walks in and he shot her twice in the head.
So what's the point for that?
Then he staged her body to look like a sexual assault had taken place. Because remember, her clothing had been like kind torn. Of pulled down and torn and everything. And that's where he wrote, fuck you, all yours, to kind of leave some kind of message like, there was some kind of, I don't know, love triangle going on or some kind of
a message. Yeah.
Yeah. Like someone was sticking a message to somebody else.
Yeah.
Would lead anybody in the direction of not Daniel, basically, because what would what he have to do with Julie, yeah. right? After Julie was dead and after he staged her body the way he wanted to, he picked up the shell casings and left. With a saw, he dismembered Sam's body. Apparently, he began laughing to himself at the ridiculousness of it all. I think he was literally just, like, breaking. Then he disposed of Sam's remains in the El Dorado Nature Center, not far from where they lived. It was a solid plan. Had the money been in cash and he could have just stolen it and walked out, he probably would have gotten away with it.
Holy shit.
Sam's past made him look suspicious to investigators, and I'm not saying that that isn't rightfully so.
Right.
And him being missing seemed like he was on the run after... Yeah. A brutal murder of his friend. The text came from his phone. She was killed in his house. It didn't look good. But while it was staged to look like a sexual assault, there was no evidence of a sexual assault. So right. that looked odd. And also, everybody that knew Sam in the last decade said this wasn't him and that wouldn't have right. happened. But it wouldn't have been the first time that someone said, well, my loved one would never do that. And of course, they did it.
Right.
So, you know, police hear that all the time. Well, they would never. Well, they would never. Well, also, people lie.
Right. And cognitive dissonance is a hell of a drug. Like.
Ugh. The ATM tipped them off.
Yeah.
And that's what started to unravel everything from there. But his only motive was the money that he knew Sam had. And yet it seemed like Sam was the kind of guy who would have helped him out if he had just asked.
Yeah, if he was like, dude, I'm behind on X amount of month's rent. I'm so sorry to ask you this, but like, can we come up with a payment plan? Like, I'm in over my head. And Sam would have been like, sure, bud, let's go move that thing. Or mm-hmm. I'll help you get a job here so that we can, you know, you can figure that out. Like, regardless of his boundaries on lending or borrowing, I don't know. Sam seems like the kind of guy who would have done anything he could to help problem solve, you know, exactly. at the very least.
Yes. Daniel Wozniak was formally arrested for both of the murders now, Jerry Kibushi and Samuel Herr. I won't bore you with the trial. He really did go to trial.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, but it was a slam dunk. And it took a few years, but in 2016, he was actually sentenced to death.
Holy shit.
Which is insane considering it's in California
in 2016.
Yeah, when the state has been pushing to ban the death penalty for years. And if his sentence gets changed, my hope is it's just commuted to life in prison with no possibility of parole, but we're not there yet. His fiance Rachel was found guilty of accessory after the fact and was sentenced to 32 months.
Okay.
Rachel denies any role in the crime and said in an ABC interview, "It was like the person I loved never really existed, and it was somebody pretending to be somebody they weren't." However, again, she lied about seeing the guy in the hat. She wasn't all that shocked when she was told about what he was accused of, and she seemed to almost set him up when she got him to confess on the recorded call and called the police right away.
Right.
It did sort of seem like her way of protecting herself.
And then you bring up the crying...
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, I'm not going to lie. It doesn't look good. I think, sure, there's a world where that's possible that she didn't know. But I think she would have to be pretty open and transparent about why some of those things took place.
Well, they got her.
Otherwise.
They got her on accessory after the fact. So it's right. not like they got her on. She was in on it. I don't believe she was. Well, but I do believe she knew about it afterwards and then tried to help cover it up. Same with his brother, too. Tim, he's the one who hid the backpack for him and held on to the literal, like, evidence of it.
Yes.
He was charged and he got probation.
Okay.
Sam's dad, Steve, can't shake the image of his son's body from his mind, but he doesn't want to. because he doesn't want to forget just how evil Daniel Wozniak is. He said in court, "In my mind, I see him whacking away at my son's head. I see him sawing my son's arm off. I have trouble sleeping at night because if I turn the TV off, that's what I focus on. Animals got to my son's body parts in El Dorado Park. They found him. They ate the flesh off of him." Steve remembers that his son's head was unrecognizable after the animals got to it.
Mm.
So during services, it was not something that could be shown. And one of his hands was never recovered. So it may have just been eaten or carried away by an animal. It just means that when he was laid to rest, they didn't get to lay all of him to rest.
Right.
And that's kind of a haunting feeling. Like, yes, he's home and you have closure and you know what happened, but you didn't get all of him.
Right.
And that's just very upsetting. Julie's brother, Taka, said, quote, "What goes through my head is I had so many chances to try to stop her."
Oh, guy.
And so he's taken on almost this ownership of not having done anything when she talked about those text messages and finding it odd that he could have said, "Don't go." And there's no way any human on earth could have known what was to come.
No, and frankly, like, you know, maybe I would think differently after hearing this. I don't think so. But if I heard my brother say, like, "I'm sorry, I need to prioritize being a good friend. Someone I care about is struggling," I would encourage that.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, hey, do what you got to do. Like, the people you love are the people you love. I'm here.
That's all and that's all you can do. That's what being a good friend is. And Julie's a good friend.
That I think that's the theme here. Like, Julie and Sam were such good friends and so reliable that this asshat took advantage of it.
Exactly.
And for fucking what? Two people's lives are worth, I'm assuming at max, $60,000 to you?
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't say that he overdrew his bank account and he still had enough for a slice of pizza. So, and
Julie was just a casualty of, what, the top of his most recent texts? I mean,
right.
The one you knew lived nearby?
Who's a girl? Yeah.
In court, her brother also went on to call him a disgusting monster. And he became emotional, speaking of how Daniel staged the scene by removing her pants, which further just disrespected Julie.
Of course.
"We lost Julie and Sam for something so simple," he said. "It's pathetic and it's disgusting."
He's not wrong.
Daniel Wozniak was sent to San Quentin to serve his death sentence in 2016. But in 2021, he was moved from San Quentin to Salinas Valley State Prison in July as part of a pilot program.
Okay.
And then he was moved again in December 2021 to California Medical Facility in Vacaville in California.
Okay.
And there's this blog, and I'll tell you it now. And it's odd because when you were doing Matthew Shepard's case last week and you talked about the documentary "Matthew Shepard Was My Friend of Mine."
Yes.
It was really odd to me because that was such a positive light.
Yes.
And this blog is called "Daniel Wozniak Is My Friend."
Oh. Weird.
So it's just a different twist on that. So
he is really good at acting like it. Sorry.
There is a blog called "Daniel Wozniak Is My Friend," and it's by a guy who I believe just remains nameless, but was friends with Dan before he was arrested and has maintained that friendship since.
Ooh.
I won't get into my personal thoughts on that, but from a criminal justice point of view, I wanted to include an update that he has written about because this man has stayed in contact with Dan and has written to him and stayed in touch via phone call. So anytime that Dan gets moved, any changes in anything regarding his sentence, I mean, and that's just really within the correctional facilities. It's right. not sentencing, like legal sentencing, but where they house him, what that looks like, what he gets for lunch. I mean, this, if I will have the blog linked in the sources if you want to read it, there mm-hmm. are updates from 2010 all the way up to February of this year.
Holy cow.
And they are regular.
Okay.
So this guy has posted a lot on this, and there's been a lot of changes.
Mm-hmm.
But I did just want to include an excerpt from the blog because Dan has been incarcerated since 2010.
Yeah.
And then he was in prison since 2016. And in 2016, being on death row is typically locked down 23 hours a day, 1 hour not.
Yep.
But the program that he is in offers a little bit more. And so this excerpt that I want to read for you is dated from February of 2024. It's the most recent one, but it talks a little bit about some of the opportunities that he has. So it's kind of an update of what's kind of might be going on in prisons right now with death row inmates.
Okay.
But also what he's been up to. So this is from the blog. And again, I'm sure I'm saying this place wrong. In Vacaville, sure, whatever. He is employed as a tutor, a group leader, and a hospice worker, to name a few of his many jobs behind bars. As a reminder, Daniel is part of a pilot program to house death row inmates in facilities where they can work instead of spending 23 hours a day in a cell. Sam Herr's parents have expressed some frustration that Daniel isn't more uncomfortable or dead. It's understandable, and I always keep them updated about any changes in Daniel's incarceration before I post here, and I know it's not good news for them when his life improves. I am, admittedly, glad that my friend has been given an opportunity to make something out of his life. I am pleased to hear him talk about the work he's doing to help the situations of other inmates, most of whom are not murderers and will eventually be released from prison. But Dan Wozniak didn't kill my child. So that's a little bit about what he's doing.
That's a post.
So it isn't uncommon. And I mean, there are different jobs he can be doing. And for all intents and purposes, I suppose Dan is useful if you want to look at it like that. But does he deserve that? And that's sort of a question I want to put out there too, is what do you believe? Dan's enjoying this. I mean, will he ever know freedom? Likely not.
Hopefully not.
I would hope not. He's capable of that. He murdered two people in cold blood, and that is something that he has to stand for. And that you have to serve your time for that. But could he possibly serve as a benefit to other inmates, or is he potentially making other inmates worse?
Also, and I have a lot of thoughts. I have a lot of feelings.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try not to go on a super long rant. Okay. But from the facts that we have, this man, for the sake of money, which can be earned, borrowed, granted,
mm-hmm.
in many ways without murder, has murdered two people for the sum of what some jobs will pay you in a year.
Just believing wholeheartedly entitled to someone else's savings, which if you just went and got a fucking full-time job, like most of us,
mm-hmm.
and did theater on the side maybe instead, like you still got to eat, bud.
Or hear me out. Even worst, craziest shit, like insane thing, took a loan out.
Oh, heavens.
That you paid back. Perhaps we wouldn't have had to lose two full fucking human beings because you wanted someone else's savings. So that rant aside, I have seen and worked with, like, very closely so many people who have had felonies on their record.
Mm-hmm.
And I see how this impacts people. I see the jobs they can't get, the loans they can't get, the mortgage they'll never get, and the car payment they'll always pay too much for a piece of shit box from 13 years ago because it's the only thing they're able to get afforded to them. And I think in so many areas, this isn't fair. I don't think it really provides an accurate space for them to re-enter. But I also have worked with them intimately through work for a long time. So I also know that there are some things that I'm okay with that with. Mm-hmm. If you rob a bank, I'm not asking a bank to hire you.
Mm-hmm.
I do think, you know, maybe you can work your way up to a cashier at Target, but that's probably going to take some time and trust
mm-hmm.
to be built. So like, I'm not disillusioned and I don't think that there should be zero consequences, right? But I do think there is a sick irony in letting a man who not only murdered two people, but murdered two people to take advantage of them fiscally into working with hospice?
Mm-hmm.
Are you fucking kidding me?
If it's hospice death row inmates or other inmates, maybe also, he volunteers.
Like, maybe he volunteers. Maybe there are other people that are dying that he thinks he can take financial advantage of, who I don't know are so grateful for all the things that he's doing for them that they just want to buy him something.
Yeah, they gave him their ramen.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, I don't know. Maybe he really enjoys being around when people are failing to thrive, for lack of a better word.
Maybe he feels good about himself with that.
Perhaps. And I don't know. I don't know if it's positively or poorly motivated, but what I do know is I'm very uncomfortable with it. And regardless of whether it's positively or negatively motivated, I'm kind of with you. Does he deserve that? Does he deserve to have something that makes him feel like he's helping other people in a way that directly parallels ways that he's killed, not killed, but hurt other people? And
but will the state of California see more of a benefit in using him than only housing him? But then you have to make sure, okay, it's not just labor. You know what I mean? It's not.
Yeah.
There's all these fine lines that you have to watch. And while I think that he volunteered for this pilot program. It's a brief program. And I don't know how long it lasted. And maybe it's over now. But it was giving it a shot to see how helpful or useful or whatever could they be.
Mm-hmm.
And does it do anything? I don't know. Maybe they're looking at mental health and stuff like that. I don't know. Personally, death row inmates? Man, you know. Darn.
There's a lot.
Darn. You know, because on one hand, there's a part of me that's like, you took away other people's lives. We have an obligation to keep you alive and to keep you healthy. But other than that, the other pleasures like TV and gaming systems like they have
mm-hmm.
and like, you know, fun and enjoyment and things like that, that your other free citizens don't have the luxury of, I don't think anybody's entitled to that. And I think you've wasted your opportunity. So there's kind of that mix, but then I'm not as stone. I don't know. At least not yet. Maybe someday. Maybe in my older years, but not there yet. Where I don't think that not there are some people that are redeemable. There are some people that can make good on it.
Well, and it's,
maybe not always that, but I don't. Nobody's a lost cause, I guess. But you have to want to change, and you have to want to get better. And
yeah.
A lot of people on death row aren't. This guy was 26.
He was 26, and it's not lost on me that we have talked about less than a week of his life in terms of actions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like truly between the murder, the aftermath, and the quote unquote cover up and investigation, it's about a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I am fully aware, and like you said, I fully believe that people can change. And hey, there's been a lot of weeks since then. You know, who knows?
But I don't think he should be out.
And I.
But that's
more
for the, that's more for the victims than it is for him.
Correct. I think that it's an interesting role because we look at our criminal justice system and we aren't a victim justice system. We are a criminal justice mm-hmm. system. We do things, and yes, we've gotten more informed over the years and more sensitive, but truly, with a lot of crimes, you don't need the victim's permission. You don't mm-mm. need their blessing. You don't need anything from them to charge someone with something.
Mm-hmm.
Domestic violence is a perfect example of that. There are mm-hmm. so many protective orders that nobody asked for.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to something like this, if you're willing to as a state, take a stand and say, we want this man dead, which is a whole nother debate I won't get into. But if you're going to do that as a state, how are we saying we want this man dead because he's such a harm to society? Also, why doesn't he go get a Dairy Queen on the way to his volunteer spot?
Well, I think it's all within the prison walls. I don't think he's traveling anywhere. I think
that's good, at least.
I think it's all within there. Like, he's tutoring other inmates or he's doing that, but he's having access to other inmates that he wouldn't otherwise have on death row, because right. death row is a 23-hour lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
So he's socializing and having that sort of rich human connection that is sought after in death row. That is one of the more haunting parts about
right.
death row inmates, is that it is isolation. There's arguments that it's inhumane.
Yeah.
That, you know, those things exist, but
I hate it. And I hate that the thing he felt so entitled to is the thing he's allowed to make. Really. I think if I'm like really boiling it down inside, what's making me angry is that he thought that money was worth taking lives. And so we put him behind bars, regardless of how you feel on the morality of us saying, well, if you took one, we'll take yours. That's what happened. And yeah, now they're saying, let's.
Right. I'm not agreeing with the death penalty. There's a lot there.
There's so much there. But like, you know, we can't change what has happened in this case. So that's what happened there. And they're saying, we're putting you on death row because you thought you were entitled to 5 digits worth of money.
Mm-hmm. Which, for your wedding and honeymoon.
For your wedding and honeymoon, which, you know, however you want to take it, that is a lot. And that is big success for a 26-year-old. There are so many richer people in this world. Like,
you had to take it from your friend. You had to murder your friend, really?
Yeah. And then we're going to say, okay, but because we can't have free labor, you can work, I guess. You can volunteer for this program. Maybe most of what you're doing is volunteering, but some of it probably has to be paid.
I don't think they're getting paid.
Oh, good. Okay. I feel a little better about that.
I can't imagine they're getting paid.
I do feel better about that, because that was really frustrating. I was like, you're going to tell me that this man killed people over 60 grand, you know, at max, and then we're going to go let him make more? So that's good.
I can't imagine it, because I feel like this is an opportunity for you to get out of your cell. You take it.
Right. But I'm with you. I do think that
there's more of a conversation to be had about it. And I wanted to read that excerpt because it's a look into maybe what's going on in our prisons right now, especially for inmates as a whole, not just this particular one, but on death row, whether you agree with the death penalty or not, in some states it exists still.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of restructuring. There's been a lot of new ideas. How can we revamp this? Is this working? Is this a deterrent still?
Also, you know, I don't want to be that guy, because I have other arguments that are more based in like ethics and morality that I consider to be higher of importance. But like, also fiscally, is it worth it? Like, how much does it really cost to house someone on death row for the amount of time that the average person stays on death row?
Well, is it more expensive to have somebody on death row, or is just in a maximum security prison, just as a regular Gen Pop inmate?
Well, exactly.
Right. But would a death row inmate, do they need to be segregated because they're dangerous? Do they need to be segregated because they aren't safe in Gen Pop? Do they need to be segregated for a different reason?
Mm-hmm.
Would they need to be segregated for some gang-related reason? Do you see all the questions that need to be answered?
There are so many. There are so many questions, and there are so many avenues that have not yet been fully analyzed for that.
I mean, I think every prison across the country is taking a crack at it, but I mean, there's cracks everywhere.
Yeah, and that's the problem. So we need one. Also, crack kills. My aunt used to say crack kills whenever somebody's pants got too low.
No.
Yeah, she'd be like, crack kills, and you know. My cousins would like hike up their pants or pull whatever. Ugh.
Well, I want to end on who's important here.
Yes. Bring me back.
Julie is remembered as an incredibly kind and giving person who was smart and sweet and would do anything for the people she cared about. She loved her friends and valued her family, and she was a friend to all who met her. She was intelligent, talented, and she was going places had she been given the chance.
Yeah.
Julie's life was used as a pawn in a sick scheme that wasn't possibly going to work, but was a casualty of someone else's greed and entitlement to what someone else has. Sam is remembered for his bravery and his service to his country and the friendship he offered to all who knew him. He was regarded as a big brother to everyone, and to know Sam was to love him.
Mm.
In his teen years, Sam had gotten in with a rough crowd, and after some particularly violent events where his friends were arrested, Sam knew he needed to change, and he did. He turned his life around, and he became the successful, kind, and dedicated man his friends and family knew him to be before his life was stolen from him. Sam should be 40. He might have been a parent by now, maybe settled down, gotten married. Maybe he'd have reenlisted like he wanted to, or maybe he wouldn't have. We don't know, we can't ask him. Julie should be 37. Maybe she'd be the fashion designer she dreamed of being. Maybe she too would have had a family. Maybe her parents would have been grandparents, and maybe Sam's would have been too. They lost their lives because Daniel Wozniak sucks.
Balls.
But Lord. Also, they lost their lives because somebody else felt they deserved what one of them had and used the other to frame the first. And I think he's where he's supposed to be.
What a case. I hear a lot of true crime cases, and we cover them and we listen to them, about people who were in the wrong place at the wrong time, or were in the middle of a heated argument, or something snapped in their brain and they had some sort of brain function issue or mental health disorder that was crippling their ability to see reality and ethics. Who knows? There's so many different reasons that people do heinous things and that people are victimized when there's no reason.
Mm-hmm.
This case feels particularly painful to listen to because the guy who did it had no reason to do it. Not a good reason.
No.
And he did it to two people. And the second, there was literally nothing in there for him. It was just to do it, to maybe throw someone off the scent. And there are so many other ways to do that. And ultimately, he did it for a reason that wasn't good, but also because he chose to have a party.
Yep. He could have gone to town hall, been just as married, rescheduled his honeymoon, kicked it out a year or two. Maybe he would have made it big.
Right.
Or gotten a job that was maybe better paying and chose to do his acting in his free time because that's what he could afford to do right now.
Yeah, and maybe he does any combination of those things, saves up, has the wedding of his dream 5 years later, and his friend Sam is there.
Hell, as his best man, maybe.
It's just, it's fucking needless, and it sucks.
But the ironic thing to me is that Dan was such a piece of shit that he could call Sam up and say, I need help with something, and Sam was there.
Yeah.
Like, Dan was such a bad person, but the rest were so good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Sam was like, yeah, what do you need help with? I'll help you.
I'm down. I'm there.
And yeah. Went to the community theater and was like, what do you need help moving? I'll move it. I'll lift it. We'll do whatever. And then he gets killed. And then he texts those odd, bizarre, I just need you, need a friend, no sex, come here texts. And Julie's like, yeah. Ew, yeah, of course not. No, I'll be there. I'm your friend. Gross. I care about you. It's never
been this dynamic. Yeah.
Like, I'm like, you're like a brother to me. Yeah. But she, you know how easy it would have been for her to be like, yeah, I'm busy, Sam, I can't be there. But she was a damn good friend.
And she made the time.
Dropped everything. And she made time because you don't have time, you make it.
Mm-hmm.
And she made time for her good friend to make sure that he was okay. And for what? To be murdered on his bed.
Yeah.
To be posed like a scene.
Degraded.
Like a set.
Yeah.
Just despicable.
And I'm forgetting about you, Rachel.
Well, Rachel's out, and she made a statement saying she wished she never met Daniel Wozniak.
Well, I'm very glad that she came to that recognition, and hopefully she broke off that engagement and got into therapy. But also, I ain't forgetting about your part either. Whatever it was. Whether that was
whether you simply were afraid, whether you were whatever, but you gotta tell someone, man. Let that be a lesson to the listeners. You can't sit on that. You will be arrested for that.
And good, bad, otherwise, kind of has to happen for an investigation, but it will absolutely be looked at however you respond.
100%.
So, a response is a decision. Don't react. Respond.
And that is all I have for you.
Well, that's on this good. Case. I need a honeymoon from this case.
Yeah.
Sorry, a vacation. Ugh, you guys. Okay, if you wanted to see the people, the places, the things, the asshats, the wonderful human beings, you could do that on our Instagram. You would find that at About Time for True Crime Pod with periods in between every word. So that is ABOUT period TIME period FOR period TRUE period CRIME period POD because podcast was too long. But if you, much like our name, wanted to send us something longer, a pod pet, a recommendation, your thoughts, your feelings, how you would like to see your wedding, you could do that to our email. But Allie, where would they email that?
So if you wanted to do all of those things and more, you could do that to our email, which is abouttime, the number 4, tc@gmail.com. So that's ABOUTTIME, numeric 4, tc@gmail.com. We love you. We thank you for hanging out with us today. If you liked what you heard and you want to keep hearing it, we definitely think you should follow the pod and
please
download. And if you haven't given us 5 stars, we'd love that too. It really helps us just boost in this algorithm that seems to work against us sometimes. But yes. We certainly appreciate all of your love and support, and we love you all back. And thank you.
So if I do look at my clock, that was
about time for true crime.
Bye. Bye. Love you.
Bye.